As far as which campaigners in particular we should remember, I think it's worth looking at the new statue in Parliament Square to Millicent Fawcett. There's Millicent is standing there with her banner, but on the plinth, 49 images of women and men who also campaigned for the vote. And I think it's very important that we remember many of those, as well as the more obvious names. And we all know of Millicent Fawcett and of Emmeline Christabel and Sylvia Pankhurst, and indeed of Mrs. Charlotte Despard. But they were the giants that were standing on the shoulders of others who did a great deal of work, but who have been more or less forgotten. And the two women in particular that I like to think of, and they both, interestingly enough, are featured on the plinth right in the centre at the front, and they were chosen to be put there by the artist Gillian Waring. So she must have thought that they would be of interest particularly. And one of them is a woman called Mrs. Elizabeth Wusenholme Elmy, who lived in Manchester initially in the 1860s, when she was very much involved in that first suffrage petition and gathered very many of the names from the Manchester area for it. And she later moved out into Cheshire to a place called Buglawton. And from there, she conducted a correspondence not only all round the British Isles, but all round the world. And she was a very astute, very analytical, very determined woman, quite difficult, I think. I think she would rub people up the wrong way, or she would be rubbed up the wrong way herself, which meant that she didn't fit in to any one society very well. And she quite often then would move off and start up a new society of her own, and then something would go wrong there and she'd move on and there'd be another one. But in the wake, she did a great deal for the position of women. She was actually involved with a campaign for the Married Women's Property Acts, and also for a campaign to allow women to have guardianship of their children. And she wrote many tracts and pamphlets, and I always think that her local post office at Buglawton must have been inundated with her post as she sent out her letters all round the world. But only one collection has survived, and it's in the British Library. Her writing's quite difficult to read, but it's a real pleasure just to see day by day how closely one particular woman was involved in all these various aspects of the campaign to improve women's position. She didn't die until 1918, so she just about, very nearly, saw the introduction of the first votes for women. She was very old by then. Whether she actually knew it, I don't know, but I would like to think she did. And then the other woman who's beside her on the plinth, whose image is there, is a woman called Helen Blackburn, who again has been rather overlooked. And she worked for Millicent Fawcett Society in the 1880s and early 1890s as a paid secretary. She had not enough money to give her services voluntarily. And she was a great chronicler of the women's suffrage movement. And she actually wrote the first study, the first history of the British women's suffrage movement, called A Record of Women's Suffrage, which was published in 1903. It was just before she died. And she goes through it, the whole campaign, in painstaking detail, and showing how the campaigners thought it was so important to win over individual MPs to their side, so that what we would say were called the political arithmetic, seeing how many members would be for this bill at this particular stage and how many against, and whether they could get the ones against to change their mind. So she sets all this out in the book, and this was how the campaign was lived. I mean, this is what she was doing in her day job. And she also built up a very interesting library, going right back to books from the 17th century, so really old books, all about the position of women. And she left this complete library to Girton College in her will. And she'd actually, it wasn't just books and pamphlets, but she'd actually had bookcases made for it. So, and they're still there, all held together. And she'd commissioned an artist to paint portraits of two of her predecessors, who she thought had done so much work for the suffrage movement. And that was Lydia Becker, who controlled the campaign for many years from Manchester and had edited a very important journal called the Women's Suffrage Journal that she'd more or less funded herself. And that folded with her death, but that gave a very good record of the suffrage movement in the 19th century. So those are just two women that I like to think of that we should be remembered. But of course, through the 20th century campaign, there's so many of these suffragettes, the women who went to prison and suffered so terribly that they mustn't be forgotten either. And there's a very interesting collection of recordings that are held in the Women's Library at the London School of Economics. And they were recorded in the 1970s by a professor. And he went and interviewed many of these suffragettes who were by then very old, but they were able to give him real life accounts of what it had been like being members of the Women's Social and Political Union and what it had been like to be in prison and to be forcibly fed. And it's really important to study those original records, ones where the primary source, where the real people are telling you of their real experiences rather than just reading about it. And some of those are particularly memorable. There's one woman called Maud Kate Smith, who was from Birmingham, and she was in her 90s when she was recording. She talks quite openly about going to the Royal Academy and slashing a painting during the Royal Academy summer exhibition and what it was like to do that and how she hated actually damaging a painting in that way, but she thought it was worthwhile for the cause of women's suffrage, and then how she was arrested and imprisoned, etc. And she also rather discreetly mentions, without involving any other people's names, she describes how she was somebody else attempted to blow up the canal system around Birmingham. I mean, fortunately, the dynamite didn't go off as it was supposed to, because otherwise the land would have been flooded all around, and there would certainly be a lot of damage to wildlife, and if not to human life. But that was an incident that has actually been recorded on tape, and it's not something that you'd ever find in any newspaper, or because it didn't actually happen.